Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Paranormal Horizons.
Join us as we explore the
world of the paranormal. Paranormal on Blog Talk Radio. Relax, put your feet up, and get ready to enter.
Good evening, everyone out there in Blog Talk Radio land. I'm Pat Rice, and with me this evening, my co-host and friend,
Jason Ophir.
Hey, Jason, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Good. Now, you have been in the midst of kind of studying and finals and exams because, you know, you're a college student. You're, even though you're much older than a normal college student, I'm sorry, I just said that. But how's it going?
I'm doing good. Yes, I've had a lot of testing lately, and I am a 40-year-old college student, which is odd. But fortunately for me, I do get a little bit of a break now, and I'm just hoping and praying that I pass my math class because, let me tell you, I'm not very good with numbers at all.
Well, I'm sure that you did. And do you get the summer off then, or do you have to take summer classes?
No, I'm an injured worker, so I have to stick with the vocational plan, which means I have to continue school through the summer. So
okay.
I'll be taking psychology and basic speech or communication and another math class. So hopefully I think these Blog Talk Radio shows might help me with my speech. I'm not much of a talker. So.
Well, I was thinking that the speech class and the psychology class might help with the radio shows.
Yeah, I think it does. You know,
I'm
kind of a big ogre-like hermit that just sits around and keeps to myself. So these shows give me an opportunity once a week to kind of, step out of my box a little bit.
Right on. I agree. And hey, I know we're going to chat about a few more things, but I just want to let the audience know, first of all, thank you for tuning in to Paranormal Horizons here on Blog Talk Radio with myself, Pat Rice, and Jason Ophir. We broadcast every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. We have a wonderful guest this evening, Karen Vance Hammond. She is an author. She has an amazing book that we're going to be talking about this evening once we get her on the line, Shoe Marks. And that sounds kind of like an odd title, but I think it will come to light once we discuss what that title means, Jason. But before we get her on the line, what's going on in the news? Because I have not kept up with it at all.
Yeah, and I've had a really hard time keeping up with the news. There's so much, as always, so much to choose from out there. But I did come across a story that, it's a bit of information for the listeners out there. If there are any listeners that are actually millionaires that have, say, $6 million lying around that they want to blow, this story is for you. A gold mine in Arizona what was put up for sale. The property is reported to be haunted as well. So if anybody wants to own a haunted gold mine in Arizona, now is your chance. The place is called the Octave Mine, and it produced over 200,000 ounces of gold in the 1800s. If you were to purchase this property, there are 25 miles of underground tunnels. How super cool is that? You could get lost. And it also sits on 266 acres of probably desert landscape. And so, yeah, if you're out there and you got a bunch of money, you could own your own ghost mine. The property is selling for $5,900,000. And if you were to break that down like monthly installments, so it would cost around $22,400. So if you have $22,000 a month to blow, there you go. The town of Octave, it was a booming town. It had stores and a post office. And it was kind of just one of these booming ghost towns back in the 1800s. If you are a millionaire and a respective buyer, the real estate agent will actually take you in the tunnels and give you a tour of the property via helicopter.
Wow.
Yeah, and this place apparently was also featured on Sci-Fi's Ghost Mine, which I don't have cable and I've never seen Ghost Mine. I thought it was a mine in southern Oregon. Did they have a series of that show out in Arizona as well?
Yeah, that's what it was reminding me of, Jason, when you were talking about it. There was a two-season series called Ghost Mines. It was in eastern Oregon, where it wasn't as big of a mine as you're kind of talking about, but it was an old gold mine that someone bought and kind of got going again, and then they also knew or had information that it was allegedly haunted, and so that was a two-series show where I actually had the opportunity to interview some of those folks on a prior radio show. But it was pretty scary. They had some crazy things happen, and it doesn't look like there's going to be a third season because of some of the events that happened. So I guess what I'm saying about that is, you know, great if you have the money to buy that, but you know what? You can't mess with those ghosts that are down in those mines.
Yeah, and I've been in mines quite a few times, actually, and they're kind of, I don't know. For me personally, I wouldn't worry about ghosts. I'd be worrying about cave-ins. I mean, if you remember those miners in, I don't remember where it was, Central America or wherever, that were trapped way down in the earth for like months, that just to me is like a nightmare, like big time.
Yeah, it very scary. But yeah, you know, I think even if I win the lottery and I have that amount of money, I don't think I would buy that mine. I don't think I want to deal with all of that. So, but yeah, good, great story there, Jason.
Yep. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So listen,
FYI,
we're going to get our guest on here in a second. But I wanted to let the audience know again. If you want to chat in the chat room, that is beyondtheedgeofreality.com, and there's quite a few people in there, and you can present questions while Jason and I are talking to Karen this evening if you have a question or a comment or whatever. But just to give a little bit of background before we get her on, Karen Vance Hammond, she was adopted and had a lot of challenges in her life that she is going to share with us if she chooses. And, you know, she's from Louisiana, which, my gosh, we know that Louisiana is haunted, Jason.
Yes, we do.
Last week we talked to Brad about that, which was very interesting. But Karen has overcome a lot of challenges in her life and written this book called Shoe Marks. She also has a couple more books coming out, which she'll tell us about. But her first book, it's a true story about true events. And again, you know, it's kind of another haunted story that goes back. It starts way back in the late 1800s. And I'm not going to try to give the details, Jason. I think it's just more about talking to Karen about what she has to say about this very interesting story that she wrote a book about called Shoe Marks. So you want to go ahead and get her in on the line?
Sure, let's do it. Hey, Karen.
Hey, how are you doing tonight? You know, when you
good,
asked me
you?
To come on, I'm doing great. When you asked me to come on the show, I was absolutely elated. I just thank you so much. What a wonderful opportunity this is.
Oh, we are really excited to get you on the show. I don't have a lot of paranormal friends on my Facebook, and I was going through my Facebook and I was like, oh, we got to get Karen on. So I was glad you agreed to come on so we could talk about shoe marks.
Well, thank
Hi,
you so
Karen.
Much.
Hi, Karen. How you doing this evening?
Hey, how are you?
I'm
it is so good.
Good
to hear from you.
I want to ask you
a question. Excuse me for interrupting. But you mentioned about Louisiana and a guy by the name of Brad. Would that happen to be Brad Duplechin?
Yeah.
Okay, he's a very dear friend of mine. In fact, he endorsed Shoe Marks, which is a paranormal inspired by true events that took place in Texas. He was one of the very first ones that reviewed that book.
Awesome.
So that is, you know, cool, me being here in Houston, Texas, and then you knowing a mutual friend of mine. That
yeah,
is so
and,
awesome.
You know, he
awesome.
Was on our show last week, and I just loved him. He's got, of course, his paranormal group, and then he has that wonderful website, GeoSpirits, as you know. And
yes.
And, you know, now, Karen, do you live in Louisiana?
No, I don't anymore. My family and I relocated to Houston, Texas. We've been
okay.
here now for 9 years.
Okay, because
yeah.
I just seem to keep having these connections with Louisiana. I have a really dear friend that I met the years I lived in San Francisco, but she was from Louisiana, and then just throughout the years, just other things that I've talked to a lot of people from Louisiana, and I think it just has so much amazing history, which you're going to talk about more tonight about your book. So it's one of the, you know, oldest states in the United States, and has just so much, again, culture and history that go along with hauntings and other things. But, yeah, so Karen, gosh, you know, tell us, you know, your bio was so interesting, but I didn't want to go into every detail. I want you to tell the audience about, you know, how you got to the point of writing this book, Shoe Marks.
Well, a lot of people know that I was born with an ear disfigurement and a learning disability. Now, around the age of 2, my parents started to notice that something was not right with me. I was
okay.
not speaking clearly. I was not at 2 years old. Most kids, little kids at 2 years old, most toddlers, can say hi and bye and drink and thank you. I couldn't even do that. At the age of 3, my parents really started to notice that I was not even up to par with a 3-year-old. When
Uh-oh.
I was put in, yes, when I was put into preschool, the preschool teacher wanted to hold me back. She
mm-hmm.
said, she's not ready. And I remember her name vividly, Queensboro Baptist Church School. Her name was Miss Wiggins, and she said, she is not ready. Something is not right. We have got to get her tested. Okay, so my parents let it slide. Because I was young, they wanted to see how I developed, and I understand that. When I was put into the first grade, I failed miserably. I could not
mm-hmm.
even say my ABCs. Usually, a first grader can at least get some words through a Dick and Jane book or a Cat in the Hat book. Pat, I couldn't even do that. I
mm-hmm.
could not read. Everything I said was backwards.
Oh, wow.
In the second grade, I failed once again, miserably. Now, a second grader is able to read a Cat in the Hat book without any problem. They're able to get through a Dick and Jane book. And I know that I'm showing my age here. I could not even do that.
That's okay.
Even to complete a sentence was difficult for me. I would point, and I would go, if I wanted a cup, I couldn't say the word, I want a cup, Mom. I would point to it and go,
Right.
Yeah, right. When I was in the third grade, once again, I failed miserably. Now, third graders should be able to read a what is called a chapter book. I couldn't even do that. I could not even write my name. And I remember going to my mom, and I said, Mommy, how do I write name? How do I write name? Mm-hmm. And she would say, and she would say, Karen, your name is Karen, K-A-R-E-N. Well, I wrote it K-R-A-N-E. I still have that piece of paper because my mom put it in the scrapbook. She wanted to have everything about me, and that's what she did with me and my sister. They finally went to, because my parents worked in rehabilitation, they worked with people who had disabilities. They knew that something was wrong. They knew that I was failing miserably. They knew that I could not write. They knew that I could not read. They knew that I talked backwards and that I was not developing the way that I should develop. And that's when they started testing me. When they tested me, they pulled me out of elementary school. They said, no, she cannot do it. She's too slow. She cannot do it. Normal kids are right here, but Karen is way down here, Mr. Ms. Vance.
Well,
she
thank goodness we had
it.
The parents, that Karen, that were in that arena, if you will.
I was so blessed. My parents worked in vocational rehabilitation in Shreveport, Louisiana, so they knew to have me tested. They knew that I needed more testing. And I remember vividly going through, and I had to do this all the time, and it bugged me. But I had to go to the hospital, and I had to have these electrodes glued to my head, and I would scream every single time my mother would have to take that dry glue out of my hair. And I remember saying vividly to my mom, and I still kind of laugh about it today, why do they have to put these wires to my head so people will know how I think? They don't need to know what I'm thinking. But what I didn't know, it is funny, I know, but what I didn't know was that they were seeing if there was any type of brain damage, any type of brain activity that was abnormal. Well, of course there was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't speak, you can't write, you can't talk well. Excuse me. I'm allergic to Houston. I've had this horrible cold for months.
Allergic to Houston.
I'm allergic to Houston.
It sounds like, I mean, through some very hard work and some very dedicated parents that you came through all of this and you even went to college.
Yes, I did. I was yanked out of mainstream elementary school in the third grade. I had to start third grade over. And they said, you're going to a new school. They said, you're going to go to Barrett Reading Center. Isn't this exciting? And I was like, what? Where am I going? They said, mm-hmm. Barrett Reading Center. I could not even sit in a regular classroom through elementary school, through middle school, through high school. I couldn't do the work. I was too slow. I could not mm-hmm. do it. And, of course, a lot of people that I know are placed in special education, but this is a really big deal for me, is that my dyslexia was so bad. Let me kind of explain to you. When you look at a sheet or a book, most people read from right to left. That's how Americans are taught to read. I was reading from, I'm sorry, I got it wrong. I got it backwards.
I say it backwards.
Most people read from left to right, but what I was doing is I was reading from right to left.
Right.
Now, when I look at numbers, my eyes avert to the right instead of the left. So if you give me numbers to read, I'm going to start reading it to you probably about the third number and start reading it from right to left. And that's what dyslexia does to me and still does to this day. Now, dyslexia is different for everybody. Some people only have it with numbers, but I have it with reading and with numbers. So when I was tested, they found out not only did I have dyslexia, but I had a reading disability. Not only did I have a reading disability, but I also had a learning disability. So I had a three double whammy put on me. Now, being in special education, if you can imagine the teasing and the taunting, horrible. And I have friends on Facebook who I went to high school with, and, you know, sometimes I'll talk about it, and I am going to put it in my novel, Karen's Story, because it was horrible of how mean kids can be to those that are different. All I wanted to be was normal. If I can
absolutely
at least be normal.
Absolutely, and you have overcome so much. Now, Karen, Jason, did you, I'm sorry, did you have a question, Jason?
I was wondering, I figured it out, I was wondering when she was talking about the things that you put on the head, my instant thought was like, what, shock therapy? But no, I think it's an EEG, am I right on that, where they measure the brainwaves?
Yes, it is. It is brainwaves. You were breaking up on me pretty good there, but I did kind of catch some words and pieces on what you were saying. Yes, it is called an EEG. Do not get it confused with an EKG, but it's an EEG, and it's an electronic. Again, what they do is that they read your brainwaves to make sure that they were normal. Now, I want you to understand this. I wanted to be normal. I wanted to be a normal person, but let me tell you this. I was very, very good at hiding my disability. Very good. My boyfriends didn't even know it. A lot of my friends didn't even know it. I was so embarrassed of myself and so ashamed of myself on who I was, where I was, what classroom I was in. If anybody I ran into, any of my church friends, when I was on a special education hallway, I would run. I did not want them to know because I wanted to be normal. I wanted to be a normal kid.
Oh, my gosh, Karen. And, you know, I so applaud you for the I can't even imagine what you've gone through with overcoming those disabilities, but I've got to jump over to, you've got to tell us about your book, Shoe Marks, and what happened. Like, what happened that, you know, motivated you to write this story? Because I was reading through the book and I didn't get to finish it. I apologize, but this is a story that started in the late 1800s where a husband murdered his wife.
That's right.
By beating
her. That's right.
Now, what happened? Like, how did you, what happened? I mean, tell us how you came into this whole story, because that's what I know the audience is just dying to hear.
When I was living in Dallas, Texas, my family had relocated to Dallas. I had met a woman by the name of Jennifer Stone, and she has become a very, very dear friend of mine. Actually, I met her in a restaurant. She was sitting by herself, and I was sitting by myself. I had my little girl with me, so we started talking. And she said, I'm going to tell you something. I have experienced paranormal activity in my home for over 25 years. And I guess she was waiting for me to laugh at her. But what she didn't know was that I, too, had experienced paranormal activity in my home. Not only did I experience that in my home, but I also experienced it. My very first experience of any paranormal activity was in the state of Maine, which is my second book, Secrets of the Shallows.
That's right. That book's going to be coming out.
It's already out. It is already out. Secrets in the Shallows, a paranormal mystery, co-authored with Kimberly Brulé, is already out. But
awesome.
Anyway, we had started talking, and she told me her story. And I said, you know, the very first thing I want to do is I want to go to Horton House. I've got to see this for myself. And so I went there, and I did experience paranormal activity. I did experience singing. I did experience footsteps. The singing sounded like this. That's what it sounded
so
like.
So was that where shoe marks kind of started?
Yes. I went back to Jen, and I told her, I said, this story, not only what I've experienced, but what you have experienced, I said, Jennifer, this story is too good. I said, you need to tell your story. You have to tell your story. It is that good, and you can help a lot of people. Now, here I am, being in special education, having all these dyslexia, reading disability and learning disabilities, not being able to go to a regular college, but I had to go to University of the Ozarks, Jones Learning Center, and I invite anyone to look it up online. You're welcome to. Wonderful program. I had never even contemplated about writing a novel. I mean, me? Come on. No way.
Right. You were just trying to get through day to day.
Yes. I'm just too backwards. So I went to her and I said, you know, I know I'll probably mess this up, but I said, your story's too good. Do you mind? Can I have your permission at least to sit down and try to write a novel about it? And she said, absolutely. So I sat down, and I mean, before I sat down and started writing, I spent 2 years investigating this house. I spent 2 years with the family. I spent 2 years sitting down with Jennifer, getting everything in chronological order. And if you read the end of the book, then you know, then you will know why I had to get things in chronological order. I needed to make sure
So, Karen, the way that the story goes about shoe marks is that back in 1899, Maggie was killed by her husband.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So then is Maggie the one that was haunting the home?
Yes, and she still does to this day. Now, after I did the 2 years of investigation, that's when I sat down and I started writing it. The paranormal activity that is in this book, if you read the reviews, now, there's a lot of them out there, but there's one review that really sticks out at me where a woman was reading the book and she was so frightened that she had to move into a room that had sunlight. She could not read it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She also had to have people around her. Now, some of the paranormal experiences that went on with this family was that they knew that something was going on. When they moved into the home, Jennifer told me, as soon as my father, and I have this in the book, you read it, as soon as they stepped up on the stoop and the father went in to put the key into the lock, the door opened on its own. Now, that is when the very first paranormal activity started with the Stones family. But there had always been paranormal activity in that home prior to them moving in. And one thing that I do have in the book is Mrs. King, the realtor, she knew that this home had paranormal activity. She knew that this home had horrible things that have happened. But she allowed this family to sink every stinking dollar into this house because they didn't want to have a house payment, because you have to remember this is 1944, during World War II time, during the Great Depression, and a lot of people were out of work and they were losing their homes like crazy. They did not want that to happen.
So Karen, let me do a quick recap here. So everyone, thank you for tuning in to Paranormal Horizons here on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest this evening, Karen Vance Hammond, and we're talking about her book, Shoe Marks. Now, Jason, you didn't get a chance to read the book, right?
I haven't started it yet. You know, I've been focused on school finals. I did start Anita's book, but I will be, as soon as I finish with this one book, I'll definitely read it. Sounds like an interesting historic story for sure.
Right, because this story is so historic, Karen, so I want the audience to be able to kind of get the feeling of, so in 1899, James, the husband.
James Fortin, yes. Yes.
He murders Maggie.
Yes.
So then the house, and I'm not clear then what happened to the house after that, but then another family in the 20s occupies it, and then that when the haunting started from Maggie?
The haunting actually started before James Horton moved out of that house. You will read in the very first chapter, I have it in there. He has got to go back for some items. He is scared to death. He saw his wife's image. He saw his wife's, he heard his wife's voice, and
well,
he had
and
to get out of that home.
He murdered her horribly. He beat her
to death. Yes, he did. And the thing is, the clocks still in that home to this day, and this is very important, but the clocks are still set at 9 o'clock. You cannot get a regular clock, no matter if it is a digital, no matter if it is a wind-up. It will always go back to 9 o'clock, and that
is
the time that
she
died. That's the time that she passed away, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Jason, have you ever heard of that happening?
I've never, not encountered it.
Wow.
But I did have a quick question. I wanted to know if Karen had had any, you know, paranormal activity when she was growing up personally.
No,
before that.
Absolutely not. No. We came from a very, very Christian family. My father was a Sunday school teacher for over 40 years. And so, no, you did not talk about that stuff. No way. So I did not experience my very first paranormal activity until I graduated from college. I mean, prior to that, I didn't know what paranormal activity was. I mean,
so what
happened?
I mean, did you have something happen then before you got introduced to the gal that, you know, had the story about the book?
Yes.
What happened?
Yes. When I was living in the state of Maine, after I graduated from the Jones Learning Center at University of the Ozarks, I traveled some, and I went up to the state of Maine, and I was sitting for a woman named Dolly, and her daughters, who were going out, said, if you hear anything, if you see anything, do not be alarmed. Just don't pay attention to it. And I said, okay, what are you talking about?
That's weird.
Uh-huh. Back in the 1800s, there was a young man who had committed suicide, hung himself with his own belt in his bedroom. And
yikes.
They said there is paranormal activity in this home. I laughed in their faces. I said, no.
Right, it was
just
something you really couldn't relate to.
I could not. But after they left, that is when the paranormal activity started. And I hung on to Dolly's arms, and I said, what is going on in this home? And she said, honey, he's here. And I said,
oh, my
here.
God.
I was scared to death.
Oh, jeez.
I would be scared, too.
But that was the very first time that I experienced it. And, you know, and I say this on every radio interview that I have. This is the 101st radio interview that I've done worldwide.
That's a lot.
Yes, it is. But I say this, and I think that you will understand, until you experience it for yourself, you have no idea what we're talking about.
I agree. So now, Karen, let's go back. Let's take a step back to the book.
Mm-hmm.
With the, you know, we know that James beat his wife to death.
Yes.
Have you been in that house?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I spent 2 years investigating, 2 years of getting notes from Jennifer Stone and her family.
Now,
I didn't want to write this novel haphazardly. I wasn't going to sit down and just make up a bunch of stuff. I needed to get their story straight. Because
so what happened when you were in the home? I mean, did you feel like, is Maggie what is her spirit about? Is it about, being sort of mischievous? Is she mad? Is she angry? What's it all about?
She's gentle, but she's angry. If you can imagine 16 years old giving birth to your fourth.
Yeah.
Giving birth to your firstborn son and then being beaten by your husband and killed, I think I would be a little PO'd myself.
I would too.
After all, this is a teenager, but the things that happened in that home when the Stones moved in, you have to understand there's people prior to the Stones moving in that moved into that house and moved right back out. They did not want to stay. And there were things, personal possessions that they left behind.
So what would Maggie do? What was happening?
Oh, my gosh.
That sounds bad if they left their stuff behind. You always hear that people run out of houses and don't look back, so you know something's going on.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, too, that I have in the book is the moving guy, Willie. He helped the Stones move in. And he said, I know this house. And he said, I tell you what, you're not going to stay long. You're going to be calling me to move you right back out.
Oh, my God.
Some of the things that happened, I don't know what happened prior to the Stones
now,
moving in.
Now, when did the Stones move in?
1944.
Okay.
Jeremy Stone was a two-time Purple Heart in World War II. He was injured at Market Garden and at Utah Beach. Now, after he was wounded for the second time, that was it for him. He had had enough of war. So when they bought this home, he had gotten a job teaching history at the local university. He wanted a house that was nice for his family out in the country because his family had always lived on military bases. He spent over 20 years in the military. When they bought the home, they had no idea. But the activity started the very first day that they moved in. Now,
really?
One thing I do have in the book, and Laura Stone, who was Jennifer's mother, she's no longer with us, she had a feeling the entire time that something was not right. Their dog would bark constantly, and nothing was there. She could walk. The whole family could walk through cold spots, bone chilling cold. And you know what I'm talking about, those that have experience. It's a cold to where your teeth are chattering, and then you walk right out of it.
We've heard that before, haven't we, Jason?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what happened was she had a hunch that something was not right, and she kept telling her husband, something's not, I'm hearing doors slamming, lights are turning on and off, this is crazy. Of course, you know, he would check the electrical box, everything would be fine.
That would freak me out.
Yes, and he would always give an excuse, oh, honey, come on, it's just an old home. You know, it's probably settling, And
famous
of course,
and
of course, Laura said, I think it's had enough time to settle. The house was built back in the 1800s. But the very first time, she was pregnant with her third child, who happened to be a boy. And when she went downstairs, and I have this in the book, I'm sure that you've read it because it's pretty close to the front. She goes downstairs and she flicks on the light switch and all the cupboard doors were open. Pots, pans were all over the kitchen. Knives and silverwares were just thrown everywhere.
Yeah,
and
that's
the kids,
freaky.
Yes, the kids thought that she was having the baby when she screamed. The kids run downstairs, and Jennifer said, I was scared to death because I knew that we were not able to get her to the infirmary fast enough. That's what they called the hospital back then. She said, I thought that my mother was having the baby, but when I went in, she was shaking so hard, she felt like that she was going to fall, and she could see her mother's breath.
Wow.
Now, that was
that's crazy.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Yep. You always hear about that, you know, where it gets like super cold.
But Karen, wouldn't, I mean, I know that Maggie, you know, being the person who was beaten to death and in essence murdered, I guess, do you feel like she was causing fear? I mean, I guess I'm wondering what was her purpose of, or what is her purpose of her spirit and her hauntings? Well, you did mention anger before, but,
you know, I mentioned this in the book, and I know how to answer this question. She had more of a, she was partial to the boys in the family. And you will see closer to the end of the book on why. I don't know. I'm not in Maggie's head, but I can tell you this. What I know the family has told me, yes, she was angry, but she could also be very gentle as well.
Right, because she cared so deeply. I mean, when you write the book, you know, you talk about her, you know, she was so caring, you know, for her infant who, and then she got taken away, who was a boy.
Yes, right. And so she had such a love for the guys in the family. Now, one thing that a lot of people ask me is the doll real? Yes, it was. You know, spirits can manifest themselves through things. They can manifest themselves through objects.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things was, I don't think that Maggie liked Laura very much because she would always taunt Laura and she would always taunt Jennifer. But one of the things is that when Laura was alone in the house and Jennifer and her brother Robert were not too far away, they heard, "Mama, Mama, 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 Mama."
Really?
And of course, Laura got up thinking that it was her newborn baby. Mama, of course, that baby couldn't talk, but Jennifer and Robert could. They were young, 10 years old and 7. Mama, 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 Mama. And she ran down the hall.
Aww.
She realized that it was not her kids. She did not recognize the voice. And she walked into her baby son's room, James Collins Stone, and that baby was suspended in thin air in front of a moving rocking chair.
Jennifer grabs this child,
and it was like a tug of war. Now, there was a baby doll that was found in the barn. I have that in the book. It had half the hair missing. It was very, very dirty. But there was also some furniture that was left behind. They did not have any baby furniture, and I have this in the book. They did not have any baby furniture for James Collins Stone. So what the kids did was that they painted it horribly.
Wow.
It looked horrible, but the kids painted it. But what they didn't realize was that that was Maggie Horton's furniture that she had put her own baby in.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So there's
now,
a lot of connections here to this book.
Totally. Now, Karen, did you ever, in your investigation, and did you ever feel like Maggie communicated or did anything to you directly?
Yes, absolutely. That's a very good question. When I was writing the Book of Shoemarks, when I was writing it, I was reading the third draft to my friend, Zarita, who also happens to be an author.
Mm-hmm.
My computer started messing up. Her computer started messing up. Both of our computers crashed at the same time. Another time that I was writing on Shoemarks, I felt a hand on top of my head. I knew it wasn't the air conditioner. I knew that it wasn't a fly. It felt like a hand, and it felt very feminine. It went to the top of my head, and I could feel the pressure go down.
Really?
And pat me, yes, and pat me on the shoulder.
So
another time,
you feel like it was a positive
affirmation? I think it was positive, yes.
Okay.
I think it was. Because let me tell you this, and I think that you will understand this, and I think that the listeners who have investigated understand this. When you investigate a property, you may not take something tangible with you, but you take something that's not tangible with you. You take something special away with you. And I think that everyone will agree with this. When you mm-hmm. touch that life, to me, you know, people ask me a lot, what do you think a ghost is? Well, I think it's a person without skin. You know?
I mean, I've
you know,
never
that's
heard
what
that
I,
description.
It's
but
a
it
person without skin. Yes, it does. It does make sense. And so when you investigate a property, whether if it's to write a book, go out on location, or investigate, you know, just trying to, you know, pick up something, you always take something away with you because you're touching a life.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, do I believe that it was Maggie? I don't know for sure, but I kind of think that it could have been.
Well, so Karen, let me ask you this. Okay, the title of the book is Shoe Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that. Why did you come up with that title?
Okay, all right. When you read the book, and this is something that happened right after Laura came down, went into the kitchen, and was scared out of her wits. The family that was living in the home. After that happened, their dachshund went over by the banister and started licking up something red. Robert goes and tells his dad, I think I found some blood. I'm not sure. Honey's bleeding.
That's
the
weird.
Gets up and checks the, yes, and checks the dog. Now, I'm sure that you've seen this on shows. I'm sure that you may have read about this. You may have seen it for yourself, that walls bleed. I'm sure that you've seen Anthony Bohor where the walls bleed. But it's
Does that really
marks,
happen? I mean, we keep hearing about that.
I have heard of it happening. I've heard of it happening in other homes. You know, you'll see the haunting that's on Discovery Channel where that has happened. If I can say it right, stigmatas have happened to people. But in Shoe Marks, where Maggie Horton was murdered, she had fought for her life, but the back of her heels produced these two deep shoe marks that are still there in the wood plank floor. Now,
wow.
Yes, they're about 6 inches long, probably about 2 or 3 feet apart. Now, the paranormal investigators that went into the home, I'm sure that you've read about that. Maybe you haven't gotten that far. They were almost positive that this is where Maggie Horton died. Now, when she gets angry, and yes, she does get angry, and there were pictures that were taken, and I've got that in the book, when her body was found. Now, let me back up just a little bit, because this is really
okay.
Interesting. And one thing that I really wanted to focus, not only did I want to focus on the paranormal activity, not only did I want to focus on what this family was experiencing, but I also felt that it was very important that I focused on Jeremy Stone. Not only was he wounded in World War II, but he was experiencing horrible, horrible, horrible post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, back in World War II, and I'm getting back to Maggie, back in World War II, they had what was called the Victory Gardens. Now, these Victory Gardens sprang up all over the United States. They were in support for the war effort.
Right.
I remember
reading about that.
Yes. They did them in England, and they also did it in the United States. And one reason why they did it in the United States was because a lot of things were rationed because they were being sent overseas to our guys. So a lot of people had Victory Gardens. Now, like I just said, Jeremy Stone had horrible post-traumatic stress disorder. He went out to dig his Victory Garden. When he dug that garden, when he put his hand on that spade, he lost himself back in the war, ending up digging a 6-foot foxhole, and he hit something hard, and he pulls up a leg bone and an arm bone. And a torso, Maggie Horton's shoes, and with the heel missing, and also pulls up his wedding ring, her wedding ring. She was buried right there on the property, and they didn't
right,
even know it.
Right, I read that in the
it.
Book that he just sort of dug a grave and or a hole and threw her in it.
Yes. Yes. Back in 1899, you have to understand, there were not a whole big, beautiful, plush graveyards like there are today. There are some, but in the countryside, usually what people would do is they would either bury on the property or they would go to a country
right.
cemetery, kind of fenced off away. Some of them are connected to a church. But in this case, because of the lies that James Horton told the people that had attended the funeral, that she died from dehydration and exhaustion. That was a lie, and she was buried on the
right. That's what he
buried
made
on
up
the property
because he knew
yes.
that he had killed her.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
Jeremy Stone found her.
What
now,
a fascinating
Jeremy,
story!
It is absolutely. It is. From what people have told me when they read the story, and I don't know why, but it's changed me, and I understand why, because I have experienced that activity, but it's also changed my faith, too. My faith has gotten a lot stronger. But
mm-hmm.
not only did they experience this horrible, horrible paranormal activity in the home, but she was buried right there under their noses, and they didn't even know it.
Right.
Now, one of the things people ask me, is the doll real? Yes, it is. That doll spoke, and you will read about it in the book.
But tell
one
us
of,
more about the doll, Karen.
The doll. The doll was actually found in the barn. Jennifer
okay.
and Robert found it. They found it with the furniture, and they brought it inside of the home. Now,
uh-huh.
Laura, the kids were there with her. Once again, they hear, Mama, Mama, you want to play, Mama?
So that
play?
Was coming from the doll?
That was coming from the doll.
Everybody
ooh,
knows I hate dolls.
On, Jason.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't like
Laura,
dolls, and I especially don't like them when they make noises.
Laura runs upstairs, and she sees the doll. You want to play, Mama? Peek-a-boo, I see you. Don't sit under the apple tree with
that
anyone
would be
else
so
but me.
I would just, like, run out of the house. Ooh.
That's an old
yeah.
World War II song, Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree. Very famous song in World War II. She finds the doll in the master bedroom on her bed, and it's bleeding and it's talking.
But see, you know, Karen, I just feel like, even though I have not read the complete book, and you and Jason, I know you will when you get a chance, but it's just like I feel like Maggie, she's 16 years old,
yes.
You know, which is common to be married at a young age. She's had an infant, and then unfortunately her husband beats her to death.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has a right to be a little angry. Now,
oh, she's like, yeah.
Yeah,
very
you know,
much.
So that's coming out now, you know, where her spirit is, you know, with the families moving in and so forth, and then you capturing this story. It's like, my gosh, you know, she has a right to be angry. I just hope that she can get some peace sometime soon and maybe pass on to the other side.
You know,
has that come up at all?
Yeah, you know, one of the things, and I have this in the book, is that Laura wanted to get rid of it. She was scared to death. She was afraid to leave her child alone. And one of the things is that she got this sage, and I have this in the book, and she lights it. And she goes to each corner of the house, and she says these prayers, "Nothing evil shall enter my home, but only good." Only good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to listen to that. Only, no evil shall enter my home, but only good. she wasn't saying the right thing. And I had the whole Psalm 91 listed in that book from start to finish. You will read it. But when the investigators came, and yes, there were paranormal investigators back then, they weren't very plentiful like they are now.
Right.
Laura says, we've tried to get rid of her. We've done everything that we can to get rid of her, and she's still here. And I said, nothing evil shall enter my home, but only good. And Dr. Carter said, wait a minute. She's not evil.
Right.
She's good.
That's what I'm thinking.
Now, Pat, I
she
noticed
was not
that
an
we're,
evil person.
We're kind of running out on time, so I wanted to give Karen an opportunity to let the listeners know where they can find more information on getting the
you
book.
Can
Karen, where can they get your book?
Amazon. All you have to do is type the words in shoe marks, and it's the very first one that comes up. You can also find me on Facebook under Karen Vance Hammond, not Karen
okay.
Hammond, but Karen Vance Hammond. You can also look under Barnes & Noble. It is there as well. Now, one thing that a lot of people do not know, a lot of people may know, I'm not sure, but Shoemarks won 2013 literary category at the Paranormal Awards in Massachusetts.
So not only
is it an award-winning novel, but it's also Synergy Books' best-selling paranormal. Now,
wow.
You can go to my publisher, which is Synergy Books. That's SYNGERBOOKS.com, and, of course, it'll be right there.
Right. And
you
then
can also,
you've got the second book out, Karen, Secrets in the Shallows, which is a paranormal mystery.
That's right.
And
you can
then
also
go ahead.
I'm sorry. You go ahead.
Well, and then I was going to mention to everyone that you're working on a biography.
Yes, I am. It's called Karen's Story.
Yeah, and you know, I just want to reiterate, you know, Karen, you know, what a I admire you so much. I can't even begin to understand the challenges that you had to go through in your life at an early age, and now here you are as an adult. You know, I don't know everything about you, but you've written books. It sounds like you have a family. I applaud you so much for
thank you so much.
What you did.
It's a great accomplishment, you know. I mean, it's not easy writing a book, I know, because my mother writes books, and it's very hard. It takes a lot of discipline. And so definitely that's quite an accomplishment, you know.
I will say this before we go. A lot of people ask me, how in the world did you write a book having dyslexia and a reading disability and learning disabilities? I use the Dragon, the voice-to-text narration device. So I speak my novels instead of sit down and write them by hand. If
wow.
I wrote them by hand, yes. If I wrote them by hand, it would be a mess. But that was one of the best birthday gifts that I ever gave to myself. Secrets in the Shallows is totally written, the parts that I've written, because I have co-authored this with the wonderful Kimberly Burlett.
Wow.
I wrote my parts using the Dragon.
So it's called the Dragon. An app or something that someone can download, Karen?
Actually, I don't think it's an app. You can purchase it at computer store, but it's called the Dragon. Now, that's what I use.
To know.
Yeah, I may actually go get this. Is it expensive?
No, it's not. In fact, I've turned on a lot of my author friends to the Dragon because it is so wonderful to walk around the home and speak what you see, and everything's perfect and nothing's backwards. I love
wow.
that. And so it's not really expensive at all. I paid about $70 for mine. Of course, I got the basic. But a lot of my friends have gotten the more souped up ones, which is a lot more expensive. But I use the Dragon, and I love it. That's what I write my novels with.
Because I'm going to check it out.
You know, really is bad, and, you know, I can't sit down and write without having to correct and correct and correct. It's,
you know, Karen, I thank you again, you know, for you're just, I so appreciate your candor and your sharing that your story, because, I mean, honestly, Karen, I think there's lots of other folks out there that have had, you know, learning challenges and things like that, and you are such a inspiration to what you have overcome. And again, thank you for sharing that, number one, and then number two, this amazing book that you've written called Shoe Marks. I mean, Jason, I, like I said, I think I got through the first two chapters, and it's absolutely fascinating. And I just want to tell all the listeners, please check out this book, Amazon.com. You can download it there. You can check out Karen on her Facebook page. And thank you, Karen, for doing this. And I you know what? And I have so much empathy in my heart right now for Maggie, wherever she
is. Yeah,
really. You know, what a horrible story that she was beaten to death by her husband, Jason, in 1899, and is still feeling that pain. You know what I mean?
We've talked about that before. I mean, we've wondered, you know, these spirits that can't cross over, and I've wondered myself, and we talked about it. I mean, does it go on forever where they're just living in this purgatory? I mean, that's kind of sad. How do all these spirits get, you know, sent to the other side? Or does it just go on forever?
That's one thing, and don't laugh when I say this, but when I take my last breath on this earth, and y'all know that my faith is very strong, and I am not ashamed of my faith. I am not ashamed of the gospel. But, you know, that's one thing that I'm going to ask God, because we really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We know that are here. A lot of people have seen the evidence, voice phenomenons, voice box. I've had several, you know, when I go out on my investigations, I've had several intelligent responses. We really don't know.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
Do they have unfinished business? We don't know. We don't know.
Yeah. Well said, Karen. And, again, it's kind of time to end the show. Karen VanZhammen, thank you so much for being on the show, sharing your personal story and your book, Shoe Marks, and a couple of other books that you have that are also available, The Secrets in the Shallows, and then your own personal story, Karen's story. So thank you so much for being on Paranormal Horizon.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Karen, for having me. Thank you. It's really been an honor. Thank you.
All right. And when I get through the book, the rest of the book, I'm going to send you a message, okay? And,
okay.
Let's stay in touch, okay?
Okay. You take care.
All right. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye, Jason.
Bye-bye.
Wow, Jason, what an amazing story. And like I said, I got through the first couple of chapters, and I can hardly wait for you to read the book, because I think you're going to enjoy it as well. It's very well written and easy to read.
Yeah, I'm big in the history thing, and it sounds like it's a pretty, you know, intense haunting going on. So I do have some time off now, so I've got to get through this other book, and then I'm going to dig into that and check it out.
Absolutely. And, you know, Jason, I just wanted to mention next week on Paranormal Horizons, where we broadcast every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific time, our guest next week is Tony Lewis. And
yes,
he is from Zero Lux Paranormal.
Yes, and they
now
are a pretty popular group out back east.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about them yet. I didn't know how much you knew.
I know that they have a regional or local television show
Right.
Kind of doing paranormal investigations. I don't know a whole lot because I haven't talked to them in person yet, and I think that's something in the future that we will start to do more is call the guests ahead of time. You're so good at that, by the way, Pat. I think that, that's going to be your job is to touch base with people. I'm not the most likable person in the world. So.
You know what, Jason? We both have our own talents, you know.
Yes. I set up
and,
the shows.
No, but I'm looking forward to having Tony. And one of the things about Tony that I'm hoping he's willing to talk about, which you know is one of my favorite subjects, is Bigfoot. He's got some Bigfoot information, and so I'm hoping that we can talk about that to him. And his logo, you know, on his website is bringing the darkness into light. And I
really like
that, bringing the darkness into light.
You know I don't believe in Bigfoot, right?
I know, but I do. You know, that's what I love about you.
Yeah,
you know.
I'm a Bigfoot skeptic, I admit it.
I know, but I'm going to talk to Tony beforehand, and we'll talk about other subjects as well, but you know, if anybody wants to talk about Bigfoot, I'm going to talk about it. So
we definitely need to talk about it because that is the one area where we haven't really had much of an opportunity to talk about Bigfoot. So that it isn't a welcome subject, and maybe I can play the devil's advocate a little bit.
Well, and I love that. And just to remind everyone, blogtalkradio.com, Paranormal Horizons, you can listen to any of our past shows, as well as, you know, just tuning in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. And again, you know, thanks to Karen for being on the show. Karen Vance Hammond, wonderful story called Shoe Marks about a woman who was actually, I'm going to say murdered, by beaten to death by a, kind of a an angry husband where the shoe marks were left on the stairs where she tried to kind of like, you know, fight, and she was only 16 years old. So fascinating story here on Paranormal Horizons.
Yes, and before we close the show, I did also want to remind the listeners out there of my little project that I talked about last week, which is, you were mentioning talents. We each have our talents, and I don't know that this is much of a talent of mine, but it's just something I do, and it turns out okay, is making various commercials and intros for not only this show, but other shows as well. And I am currently trying to expand our commercial database so that we have more commercials during the show. Normally, halfway through the show, we play something. We didn't this week, but we'll end the show with something. And so if anybody out there wants to promote a book or promote a group or whatever, they can get in contact with me, and I can help build a commercial that we can play during the show promoting whatever they want to promote as long as it's related and relevant to the paranormal.
I love that, Jason. And I'm actually going to send Karen another private message. She may want to do a commercial as well about Shoe Marks. And, so if anybody out there wants to be part of Paranormal Horizons, Jason can assist with making a commercial and just kind of help network and promote and, you know, just kind of one, can I say, one big happy family, Jason? Is that kind of a good description?
Yep, we're all one big happy family. No paranormal drama here. Drama
free. That's right. All right, Jason, so great to do another show with you this evening. And again, next week, look forward to our special guest, Tony Lewis from Zero Lux Paranormal.
All right, folks.
I'm Pat Rice. Thanks for joining us.
This is author Edwin F. Becker. My success with 1-800-RENT-A-GHOST has been such that I have a whole new enterprise. It is for those that are thinking, Man, I can't wait for that zombie apocalypse. Well, I have the answer for you. Dial 1-800-OWN-A-ZOMBIE. You'll be the center of attention wherever you go. What a surprise those Jehovah's Witnesses will get when they knock on your door. Are you the black sheep of the family? Just think of the terror you can bring to that next family gathering. I'll bet you never knew Battle Uncle Ned could jump tables and run so fast. Or, take your zombie to the next high school reunion. You can turn him loose on those nerdy brainiacs that made fun of you and say goodbye to their high IQs. Laid off from your executive job? Take your special friend to the boardroom to help you say farewell to your boss. Or add a new meaning to the term budget cut. Neighbors giving you problems making noise? Introduce them to your new pal and stand back, because all will be quiet very soon. You'll be waiting for that next a-hole to look at you and say, bite me. Because anyone who gives you the finger really does give you the finger.
Excuse me, kind sir.
Dial 1-800-OWN-A-ZOMBIE. Order now and get the free book, Sewing on Limbs Can Be Creative. Not responsible for infectious disease, death, mayhem, severed limbs, cannibalism, paranoia, loss of sanity, nor that god-awful stench. And one more thing. There will be no returns. Ha 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 ha!